I might say that during that period of time, while Lester and Albert were out west, where they went to stay cool and not get up before grand jury, they were pulling robberies out there, house robberies. Mayor LaFortune's mother and father had gone out to a place called the Wigwam Resort, which was outside of Scottsdale, Arizona, a very nice resort. They had gone on their annual trip out there, and Lester, according to my investigation, happened to be on the same airplane they were on. He was going to go out to Phoenix. He had some buddies out there. He gets on the plane, and he's walking down the aisle, and I guess he walked past them, and I assume they were in the first class. She was wearing some jewelry, and Lester, she told me, oh, he knew all about jewelry. He later told me this. He could spot a good ring, you know, whatever. He had criminal talk. And he made it a point then to watch when they got off of the airplane at Phoenix, to follow them. He saw their luggage, and then he saw a man there from the Wigwam Resort, put them in a car, said Wigwam Resort on the side. So he put that all together, put the scheming, and by harassing and coming up with all kinds of stories, found out the number of the cottage they were staying in, because there's cottages there at the resort. Went out there, and they went in, tied them up, robbed them, and all that. Now, that had happened just prior to the grand jury itself, but they'd left already, so they were out there, and they pulled that, along with other robberies. That becomes somewhat critical in understanding this whole picture of what's going on. The grand jury comes back with no indictments. Bob's wife calls out there, telling everything's cool, no indictment. Okay, so they come back. Bob comes up from down south.
Bob
Jenkins. Ruby Charles Bob Jenkins, or R.C. Jenkins. He was out of Blue Jacket, Oklahoma. He was the older man in this trio. His original conviction in his criminal record was for cattle rustling in Montana in 1947. You know, so he was a senior, I would say. The trio of Pugh, McDonald, and Jenkins, they were career robbers, I'll call it. They had kits they carried, duffel bags with jumpsuits, masks, tape, anything that could be useful to somebody engaged in the career of home robberies. They had sources they could talk to about finding likely victims, you might say, including people who could tell them who had home safes and so on.
Isn't it true that in the case of the attempted assassination of Fred Nelson, you really couldn't build a case strong enough to arrest Pugh and McDonald?
That's correct. You know, that's reflected, I think, in the grand jury not returning any indictments. But grand juries, whenever I asked Bob Sims to impanel that grand jury, I didn't have any illusions. At the same time, I was hopeful that we could glean information that would ultimately help build toward where we were trying to go. So that was not shocked, surprised, or anything else whenever the grand jury did not return indictments. But I do know that after that August 25th situation, and these people have testified, that there's a period of time there where Cleo disappears. McKenzie and I drove out there. We went out there, and she went around the house to her family. She had some nieces and nephews, I recall. Brother Tom Gilbert, who lived over in Wagner County, over by Wagner, and his son. And everybody was curious, where's Cleo? What's going on here? That would be when she had disappeared, I would say, was sometime in the fall of 1970. One night, I remember getting a phone call from a Tulsa police officer saying, buddy, we found Cleo's pickup. Her pickup was abandoned out at the Union Square Shopping Center, and her purse was in the pickup, which doesn't seem logical. They processed the truck, the whole bit, to try to figure out what's gone on here. But anyway, somebody knows now there really has got to be some foul play. I mean, that's pretty obvious when her truck's there with her purse. She disappeared sometime in the fall. And then in February of 1971, February the 24th, actually, is when her body was found out across from the Page Belcher Golf Course. I don't know if the buildings are still there or not, but if you came out of the gate of the golf course out there, and you looked across the road to the east side of the road, sitting back, there's crumbling down, sort of falling down stone structure, a house that had been an area of just weeds and had been abandoned. I think somebody told me, ironically, at one time it had been a location where a bootlegger lived and sold whiskey out of that place.
65th and Union?
Yes,
there?
Union. Yes, sir, that is correct. Again, I don't know if any part of that structure is still there, but Cleo's brother, Tom, and his son, little Tom, had been looking for her. And this became a big issue or a big dispute by some people, that they would go out and look for places where she might have gone. They knew that she'd been out in that area before. A lot of these people would pick up stones over there, big sandstones that building, that house had been built of. They were out there, snow on the ground, and they're looking around, and they get over by where the septic tank was. There's little marks like animals have been around there in the snow, like they've been walking around there a lot. there's been a hole knocked in the top of the cover of that septic tank, and they look down in there, and all they can see is rocks. Little Tom Gilbert, Cleo's nephew, puts a rod or stick down in there and claims that he could feel something down between the rocks that might be a body. Later on, people said, oh, that's impossible. You couldn't have done that. They must have got a tip. It's all a lie, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't know whether they got it on a tip and they couldn't divulge who they paid money to if they did or things like that. But that became later an issue in trying these cases. But they reported, we all go out there, and sure enough, it's Cleo. They take all the rocks out and they take her out of there. There's an autopsy. She's been shot twice in the back of the head. But it's no question it's her.
Do we know who did that?
I do today, yes.
Who was
it? The shooter was Lester Pugh. Albert was driving the car. Pugh was in the back seat and shot her with a .22 pistol that he had in his boot. They took her out to this location because she was slumped over in the car. He put a towel around her head real quick and rubber band around that to keep blood off the car as best they could. When they got out there to this scene off of Union, it's nighttime. Lester gets out and opens the passenger side door, and she falls out, rolls out onto the ground, and she comes to and says, you killed me. You didn't have to do that. He shot her again, which was the second shot. Now, later on, Dr. Fogel, who was the pathologist who did these, said, assuming that this is the first shot, it's very plausible that she could have regained consciousness before the second shot is fired. Then they put her down in this septic tank and then kept putting big stones and rocks down on top of it. So that when everybody went out there for this recovery, and then we'll forget Tommy Llewellyn, who was an identification officer for the city of Tulsa, he was down in that hole. The fire department had a truck backed up there, and they were sucking that water out of there. He's passing the rocks up, and I thought, boy, you know, he's earning his money today. Finally, when he got down to where she was, you could see her laying there. She's pulled out, and they did the autopsy over at the garage of the Moore's funeral home because of the condition of Cleo.
That was 3 months later after the killing.
That is correct. Then, within a month, I get a call from Chief Purdy. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning. Buddy, get over here to this address, this little strip apartment off of 2nd Street. Maybe 4 or 5 unit cinder block apartment, one story. Arla Self is laying back in the bed dead. He's been shot 3 times in the head, face, really, around the face area. Turned out to be a magnum had been used to shoot him. I know I forget what Purdy said to me, because he's waiting on me, and he got a police officer stationed there holding the scene. And he said, well, it looks like you lost another witness. I didn't take too kindly to that. There's got to be some explanation. Well, Arla Self had reason to have a lot of enemies. And it turns out there's another reason, if you look for motives, for Lester Pugh to fear Arla Self, fear that they don't know what anybody said before that grand jury. Was there really a lot of evidence they got against us, or just what was it? Maybe if we shut these people up, nobody can testify. Well, Lester and Arliss had committed arson in Little Rock at a nightclub. Arliss turned state's evidence and was ready to testify in Little Rock. The way this worked out was that Lester was afraid of Arliss because he knew that he could put the heat on him for sure in Little Rock, but the case had been just laying there. It was sort of dormant over in Pulaski County. That's Little Rock. So things are cool. He hadn't been told to come back. He was charged. He knew that one of his own co-defendants going to be turned to state's evidence, but there was no heat because while he was charged, it had been laying there for months and months. The prosecutor at that time was an older man, about ready to retire, I think, in Pulaski County. Well, Jim Guy Tucker, who later became the governor of Arkansas, got elected as the prosecuting attorney for Pulaski County. And boy, he's a young guy, and he's got a lot of vim and vigor. He starts going through these old cases, just coincidentally in time with the bombing of Judge Nelson. One of the cases that comes up is this case for arson and burning this nightclub by Lester Pugh and Arla Self. So he said, hey, there's nothing wrong with this case. Is this guy, Arla Self, available? They check on him. Yeah, he's over still in Creek County. Okay, fine. So they contact Lester's lawyer, whose name appeared on this docket sheet when he was arraigned in Little Rock, and said, hey, we're setting this down to get a trial date, so get your client over here. He's on bond and needs to be over here. Now, that lawyer calls a lawyer in Tulsa. That lawyer in Tulsa is, as I understand it, a friend of Pugh and McDonald, Charlie Pope, the one who ran against Nelson. They say, you're going to have to go to trial. Well, okay, so then it becomes more of an emergency for Lester Pugh. Those things are working together. This grand jury hadn't returned indictments, but he testified before them. They knew that. He didn't wear a disguise. Then they get this heat coming now from Pulaski County. That's got them all worried. Motive-wise, in that case, in my opinion, was to keep him shut up, not only about the bombing, what information he had there, and also about the arson in Little Rock. As it turns out, he was shot by Lester. Albert was there, and they woke him up to shoot him. He's a heavy drinker. I mean, he was a bad alcoholic. There was a roommate, Buford Borland, who was an alcoholic, just got out of the penitentiary, and Early Self took him in to let him stay there at the house with him. They would drink all day long, drank and drank and drank. There was an empty bottle of vodka laying beside the bed beside Arliss on the floor, and there was a copy of the book, The Godfather, laying there. He'd been reading that at some point. So we had two people who had been before the grand jury who now are dead. Well, there's a third party that would be involved here if there's any relationship. Martin Edwards, who I told you earlier testified before that grand jury. Martin is missing. In the summer of 1971, I guess it would be, he's missing. People are asking about him, his family. He lived in a trailer park out there off of Riverside Drive, south of the Oral Roberts area, where you go across a little bridge back to the west. Frank Thurman and I drove out. His mailbox, a rural-type mailbox, mail's fallen out on the ground, so it's obvious he hadn't been around him. So people begin to be concerned about Martin, and Martin does turn up. His body's found September of 1971. Just barely over the county line into Osage County. He'd been buried in a shallow grave and shot several times.
Why was he murdered?
Well, again, I'm going to have to speculate. I do not know, except to say that the unknown is sometimes bothersome. There's no question that, based on other information that I have now, that Martin would have information about a lot of criminal activity by Pugh and about McDonald. The story that came out to law enforcement ultimately about Martin was that Martin had taken an agreement. Somebody was mad at somebody else, and they were trying to find somebody to do something to that person. But Lester Pugh said, "Could you help me with this?" And Lester went out to look at the grave that had already been dug by Martin out in the woods there in Osage County. He shot and killed him, put him in the hole, and he was a friend of the person who was going to be hurt. It could have had no relationship at all, but I say it's what you don't know sometimes that worries you. If I can conceive that a Pugh or McDonald would say, "We don't know what he said in there, but he must think that he knows something, you know, about the bombing," if it was a tangential motive or the motive. But those three witnesses before the grand jury meet very grisly demise.